This is The Drive with Josh Graham podcast.
We're internet sensations, guys.
Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons, 3 to 7 on WSJS.
We're on a Tuesday drive. It is WSJS. News talk sports for the Triad. Where since Wake Forest NC State is right on us with a Thursday night kick, we decided to bring out a couple big guns today. First, Joe Giglio will join us from Raleigh about a half hour from now. You know him from the popular Ovius and Giglio podcast. Then Wake coaching legend Dave Clawson will be our guest at around 5:30. There's plenty to talk about surrounding this matchup because this latest addition to the Wake Forest NC State rivalry is going to be remembered as a milestone game. And it's likely going to be remembered that way in more ways than one. For starters, it'll be Jake Dickert's first taste of the ACC Big Four. His predecessor's most memorable wins were against the Wolfpack. If you are a Wake Forest fan, what are Dave Clawson's best wins during his 11 years? Because any short list is going to include some of the following. 2017, punching the ball out at the goal line in Winston-Salem, securing a win. 2018, Jamie Newman's first start, spoiling Ryan Finley senior night on a Thursday night at Carter-Finley Stadium. Do you know what else was that night when NC State played Wake Forest in 2018? Same night as the Panthers-Steelers game that Cam Newton injured his shoulder, TJ Watt.
Thanks for the reminder of that.
I was in the press box at Carter-Finley watching that game and looking up at the Panthers-Steelers game going on at the exact same time. 2021, Wake Forest 45, NC State 42, the game that essentially earned Wake Forest an ACC championship appearance, gave them the inside track in order to do so. Here was Jake Dickert this week on preparing for his first rivalry game in Winston-Salem.
I've been around a lot of rivalries. You know, the Dakota Marker, fantastic rivalry. The Border War, Colorado State, Wyoming, the Apple Cup. And now to walk into the Big Four, I think is something really important. I think we got to preserve these games. I'm a big fan of always playing all three of them. Right, whether it has to be non-conference or not, I think that's a big thing for us, our state, and hopefully all four institutions. Like, we preserve rivalries. I just came from a place where that one's getting a little bit diminished. Right, you saw the Oklahoma State. Like, what does it still mean in college football? So I think it's a big deal. I think we understand that.
Agree.
That's just facts.
Sign off on all of that from Jake Dickert. So that's one piece of this. Thursday night's going to be remembered as Jake Dickert's first crack at the Wolfpack. On the other side of the ledger, this could be Dave Doran's last run-in with Wake Forest. Or here's what we feel more comfortable saying, Will. This will be likely Dave Doran's final trip to Winston-Salem. It would be surprising if he sees year 14. It would be stunning if 2 years from now, we were talking about year 15 for Dave Doran in Raleigh. Just like NC State coaches before him, Winston-Salem has been a house of horrors for Dave Doran. 2-4 record for Dave at a Legacy Federal Credit Union stadium. To Dave's credit, though, that's actually one more win. Two wins is one more win than Tom O'Brien and Chuck O'Mato had combined in Winston-Salem. NC State simply doesn't go into Winston-Salem and come out with wins. Dave Doran, it's kind of nuts how long he's been there. He arrived at NC State the year before Dave Doran was hired at Wake Forest, and now here he is going up against Dave Clawson. What did I say? Dave Doran twice. He was hired a year before Dave Clawson was hired at Wake Forest, and now he's going up against Clawson's successor. Here was Doran about the difference in preparing for Jake Dickert versus what was familiar with Dave Clawson.
Yeah, it's nothing like it was. So, I mean, it's, you know, more traditional
college football offense. You know, you don't have the slow mesh anymore with the RPOs. And what's the biggest difference besides that is the fact that they've got a really, really fast athletic quarterback. And not that they haven't had guys that can run, but not like this guy. And if you misfit a run or he takes off on a scramble, he can score. And so you've got to be really disciplined.
Even people around here don't appreciate this rivalry enough. Played this game with Will prior to the show starting. This is the second longest uninterrupted rivalry in all of college football. Will was asked, how many consecutive years do you think these two teams played? He started thinking, what might be a lot? Said 20, maybe 30? Well, ACC, maybe since the beginning of the ACC. So 1954, that's what, 70 plus years? Thursday night will be the 116th consecutive year that these schools have met. Wake Forest and NC State have met every year since 1910. Every year. And it's going to get the national spotlight. ESPN going to be on the call. We're going to be doing our show from a Legacy Federal Credit Union Stadium and can't wait for it. A milestone rivalry between NC State and Wake Forest. A rivalry game that we're going to remember. Will Dalton is the executive producer of this show. Remind the people what movie you watched for the first time last night and we'll be reviewing today.
It was a doozy. I watched Boogie Nights.
We'll try to talk about that movie in a way that doesn't cost us our jobs little bit later.
Good luck to us.
On. Oh, you think so, Eddie? Oh, you think so, Doctor? Make sure, if you're not already, well, you can watch the show in case you didn't know on YouTube, Twitch, and X. You can chime in on our live feed on YouTube and on X at Josh Graham Show at WSJS Radio. However and wherever you're listening or watching, greatly appreciate that. Let's get to the NFL. The silver lining for the Carolina Panthers from Sunday's debacle in Jacksonville was easily rookie wide receiver Teteroa McMillan. In his first NFL game, T-Mac was Bryce Young's top target. He had a team-high 5 catches on a team-high 9 targets for a team-high 68 receiving yards. Dave Canales sung his praises after going back and watching the tape.
I thought he played fast. You know, I thought he looked very comfortable out there one-on-one outside. You know, we moved him around a little bit. And he showed an ability to be able to handle that. You know, he and Bryce were on the same page timing-wise. So I was really pleased with the way he played. You know, I'd love for him to come up with the big touchdown in the end zone, shot down the field. But he ran a beautiful route on it. And he really gave us a chance to have some explosives down the field and to just have a consistent target.
Yeah, the failed one-handed catch, that really is the only thing you could nitpick. He should have gone up with two hands. Maybe that would have given the corner less of a chance to disrupt things. Maybe he could have high-pointed it a little better with his big frame. To T-Mac's credit, though, he didn't even give himself a pass for not making that one-handed grab.
Nah, I feel like, you know, that's a routine catch for me, so... you know, I feel like I've had better coverages with our guys in practice. So, like I said, that's something that I got to make. And, you know, next time the opportunity comes, I'm going to make it.
Yeah. Rookie in the NFL.
Nah.
One-handed grab in the end zone. That's just a routine grab for me.
Nah.
I'd love to do that move. What is the equivalent of that in sports talk? If I ask a really thoughtful, insightful question with my eyes closed, nah, it's just a routine.
It's just how we do it around
show
here.
Around here. Check out this tease. Nah, it's just routine.
No notes.
No notes. All off the cuff. Brush some dirt off my shoulder. The expectation should be for him to be a top receiver. Eagles rule in the chat. T-Mac will be an all-pro in a couple of years. Well, when you're drafted top 10 in the draft, that's the expectation. You're supposed to be a cut above. We talked about this in the context of Marty Herney, the former GM of the Panthers, who had five cracks at making top 10 picks. Five of them, if memory serves. Well, let's just go through the last 20 to 25 years of top 10 picks the Panthers have made. 2002, Julius Peppers. 2003, Jordan Gross. 2011, Cam Newton. 2012, Luke Kuechly. 2017, Christian McCaffrey. All those guys are either going in the Panthers Hall of Honor or they're getting gold jackets in Canton. That's the standard when you're picked in the top 10. And even beyond that, Derek Brown got the extension. J.C. Horn got paid this offseason as well. Was a Pro Bowler. If you're drafted in the top 10, with respect to Xavier Legette, who they expect a lot out of, he was taken the last pick in the first round. T-Mac was taken in the top 10. The standard is just a lot different when you're in the top 10, and just because you're a rookie doesn't mean you can't be one of those top receivers right away. Three of the top 10 receivers in terms of yardage last year were rookies. Ladd McConkey, Brock Bowers, can't remember if it was Brian Thomas Jr. or Malik Nabers that was the third to do it. It was one of those two LSU guys.
I think it was
Malik
Nabers.
One of the two of those guys was in the top 10 as well. And Tataroa McMillan might be that guy. And here's the thing. Carolina needs him to do that. Now that Jalen Coker is on the shelf for a few weeks and you just traded away Adam Thielen. Thielen had that rough third down drop yesterday on Monday Night Football, his first target back in Minnesota. Carolina got a fourth-round draft pick out of that. Not terrible.
The Drive with Josh Graham, only on WSJS.
Got some breaking news in our studio. Without any buildup, without any warning, the ACC just dropped the conference schedule for men's basketball. We're about a month away from ACC Basketball Media Days in Charlotte, which we look forward to. But these literally just dropped into our lap. You won't be surprised to learn. This is the first thing we do when we get the local ACC schedules. When are the Duke-Carolina games? Once again, it is the first game, the Saturday in between NFL Championship Sunday. Or the NFL Championship Weekend, Conference Championships, and the Super Bowl. That's the first matchup between Duke and Carolina. That's going to be in Chapel Hill. And then the second one is the last Saturday of the regular season. The last time those two teams have met in the regular season on a weeknight was the Zion Williamson shoe game in 2019. The one that Obama was at, that Zion went down with the foot, with the shoe explosion, implosion, 30 seconds into the game. That's the last time these teams have met on a weeknight, and that was in late February, so there was a quick turnaround between the two. Now ESPN likes having the Duke-Carolina game in between Conference Championship Weekend for the NFL and the Super Bowl, so the weekend between those two, and then the last Saturday of the year where they'll close things out in Durham. Joe Giglio now with us, Ovius and Giglio podcast. Where is your mind at with NC State heading into Winston-Salem Thursday night?
Well, hello, Josh. Appreciate you having me on.
Of course.
My mind is that I watched Wake Forest play against Kennesaw State, and you might tell me, man, they are missing their running back. But I hate to do this to Jake Dicker because he was really inspiring in Charlotte. He said, we're built in the dark. Is that the theme?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got bad news for Dickert. They're staying in the dark this year. I don't see them winning a league game this year. I really don't. They were bad up front. They were really bad up front.
Is it alarming and to you when
was it my boy Tommy Castellanos who said Nick Saban ain't walking through that door to save you? The Wolfpack killer, Clawson, he's going to be on the program today, or he's either he's either following me or he's going to be on next. He ain't walking through that door to save you guys. It'll be a minute. It'll be a minute, right?
Yeah.
I'll give the guy a chance, but you can't claim to be born in the darkness or built in the darkness. Buddy, you're going to be in the darkness for a minute this year, 2025. No, not a lot of sunshine in 2025 for the Deeks.
Do you have a favorite memory covering this rivalry that is very underrated, even locally? This will be the 116th consecutive year that these teams meet, the second longest continuous rivalry in all of college football.
There's a couple in there. The Jim Grobe game in 03, so Philip Rivers' senior year, Chuck Abano really lobbied the ACC not to play Jim Grobe and the chop block and the orbit sweep before the Ohio State game. And of course, it was plopped on the schedule right before NC State went and played the 2002 national champions in Ohio State, and notably lost the game down in Winston-Salem, of course, because that's what they do when they go to Winston-Salem. That was an interesting one, a day game, Philip Rivers getting an L there. The other one that always stands out to me is the Jamie Newman game in 2018.
Oh, yeah.
Handsome Sam Hartman got hurt, and they have this quarterback no one's ever heard of, and in your best Seinfeld voice, Newman. I mean, how in the world did that happen in 2018 with all the injuries that Wake Forest had? The answer, of course, is Dave Clawson, a true football genius.
That was the Ryan Finley senior night. And as I pointed out to Will Dalton earlier, it was the same night that the Carolina Panthers took their nosedive that they might still be on. It was the Thursday night game that the Panthers played the Steelers and T.J. Watt hit Cam Newton's shoulder. Same night. They played, you could turn the channel from that game, which was a blowout, to Jamie Newman hitting Jack Fruitenthal, if memory serves correct, for the touchdown to win that game. Joe Giglio is with us here, Ovius and Giglio Pond. This is a milestone game, it feels like. It's Jake Dickert's first against NC State, and I feel pretty comfortable saying that this is the last Dave Doran trip to Winston-Salem. If it's not this year being the last for Dave, then I feel comfortable saying probably isn't going to get to year 15. So just for the purposes of this conversation, might be the last trip to Winston for Dave Doran. He's 2-4 in Winston. Are State fans going to remember the Dave Doran era fondly? Because the phone calls you guys take on the podcast make me think otherwise.
I thought you meant the Wake series. Trivia question, as I presented to Dave Clawson when he was on the Ovius and Giglio podcast last week. Dave Doran has a winning record against Dave Clawson. You never would know this.
6-5.
Never know this.
6-5.
And yeah, and I think you got to add one of the Bowling Greens in there too.
Oh, sure.
It's wild. I thought you were going to say, will they remember Dave Doran's record against Wake Forest fondly? I hope State fans remember Dave Doran's tenure at NC State whenever it ends, but I'm with you. I think it's probably sooner than later. And by his own volition, by the way. I hope they remember it fondly. I think Dave is a guy who has outperformed his resources consistently, both in the normal college era, the antiquated amateur NCAA as a I'll clean up my language here, NCAA as a landlord institution, right? So I think he did well in that, outperformed his resources. I think in the NIL era, it's been a little bit of a mixed bag of results. It's been a little trial and error. I think, you know, the team that lost to Wake in 21, the Wake team that went and played Pitt for the ACC championship, that was a really good football game. And obviously kind of a last stand for Wake, if you will. I hope State fans do. Now, part of me thinks that, you know, here we are however many years later, I can't say a nice word about Herb Sendek. So that's perfectly fair that I can't sit here and tut-tut fans for the way that they feel about Dave Doran. I think you all kind of, you have your own emotional attachments to whatever game you were at or whatever loss you were at. What's been wild this year, Josh, is the reaction after wins. I have never seen a reaction like the one after the ECU win. I would like to emphasize that they beat ECU. If they had, I would have hated to see what the reaction would have been if ECU had converted at the end of.
Oh, just find out if they lose on Thursday night. Mess around. Find out.
Yes, as one of our friends likes to call it, the year 13 truthers are ready for Thursday night and what's going to happen down in Winston-Salem.
Does that remind you at all of the reaction that we're seeing to the Panthers losing to the Jaguars, where Dave Canales is saying perfectly reasonable things, but it seems the reaction is a lot to do with Matt Rhule, Frank Reich, Scott Fitterer, and 7 years of this weighing on fans, similar to the NC State. I don't think the reaction you got was because of that one game against ECU. It's 13 years of baggage.
There's certainly some exasperation there when it comes to the Carolina Panthers. I would say, I don't think handsome Dave Canales helps his case. That's the second person I've called handsome today, but hey, I don't think he helps his case with the fake optimism, with the Russell Wilson, you know, rainbows and butterflies optimism. Like I heard, you know, tell the truth Monday or whatever it was at the film session. It's like, dude, Bryce was terrible. It's okay to say it. You know, there were some missed opportunities in there that I'm sure he would like back. And it's like, I get it. Some people aren't from New Jersey. Some people aren't negative like I am, but it just doesn't seem very genuine to me when the way that he evaluates his own team. And I think that is really not, I think Charlotte fans in particular are picking up on that. To your point, they haven't had a winning record since 17. Is that right?
8 years.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, here we go again a little bit. And the way that week one game played out, Jacksonville, just like the Saints last year, remember, they got ran out of the building by the Saints and you were like, well, maybe the Saints are good. No, the Saints are not good. And I think the same thing with Jacksonville. You're watching Jacksonville and you're like, wait a second, did they hire a Tampa Bay offensive coordinator? And did they look like $1 million? And wait, with the number one overall pick at quarterback? Wait, why isn't that us? I think that's, you know, I think the context is hurting Canales and the Panthers too.
Joe Giglio, Ovius and Giglio podcast. Big picture with the ACC Big Four, swinging it back to college. How much separation do you see between these four teams? It seems that you have already put Wake Forest in a cellar, and Jake Dickert, listening to our conversation right now, is loving that. Loving that.
That's
going
good.
Into Thursday night.
I mean, hey, I'm not saying he won't get out of the darkness eventually. I'm just saying this year.
Just saying. Hey,
I've seen this one.
What does the law of the wolf say about you feeling that way about Thursday night in Winston-Salem?
I don't know. Hey. I've been wrong many a time before. But usually I predict the state loss down there.
So is State the best team in the state? Is it Duke? Where's Bill in all this?
Yeah, I need to see Duke before I can really give you that one. I think Duke has the best quarterback in the state. I think I can safely say that. I think Illinois,
Darian Mensah-Bowl,
like Indiana.
Darian Mensah-Bowl coming up this week against Tulane.
Yeah, I think they have the right quarterback. I think they did really well with that. I think Manny's done a good job. Defensively, obviously, the 5 turnovers contributed to the 45 points that Illinois put up against them on Saturday at Wallace Wade Stadium. State, I think, will be about what they've been. You know, wouldn't surprise me if they went 8-4. Wouldn't surprise me if they needed a win the last week of the regular season to beat Carolina to get to a bowl, but that wouldn't surprise me. Carolina has easily been the biggest disappointment to me, and part of that is their own doing. How they rebuilt their roster after the spring and seeing some of the other players that are out there that could have been on their team or were on their team. And then the choices that they made. And then there were two or three plays in the Charlotte win where I was like, 63-year-old Bill Belichick would never stand for this, let alone 53, 43, whatever other point in his life. I thought the 4th-and-1 deep shot was like football 101 for dummies. Like, what are you doing? And then there was a personal foul that had aided a Charlotte drive that those are the kind of things that, seriously, he never would have stood for ever, even on his worst day as the Patriots coach. So they've been a tremendous disappointment to me. Not that they lost to TCU. I thought that they would lose to TCU. But the way that they've played through 2 weeks has just not been anything to indicate to me that the quote-unquote greatest coach of all time is in charge of their operation.
Two quick things on the way out. Number one, set odds because you can't bet on it right now. NC State hosting North Carolina at the end of the year.
What, you mean game day or?
Oh, no, no. What are the odds? Like laying?
Oh, for the game?
For the game.
Oh. Six? Seven?
State? State minus six?
Favored by six or seven? Yeah.
I'll take the pack.
It won't be that much.
Yeah, yeah. And then lastly, Will Dalton has seen none of these movies. You tell me if he needs to see one of these in particular. 16 Candles, City Slickers, The Game, yeah. La La Land. Which of the four?
Yeah, buddy, you've never seen 16 Candles? I mean, I'm 50. My bad.
Haven't seen it.
16 Candles, I pretty much know every word to the movie 16 Candles. Now, it's slightly problematic in 2025.
Yes.
But there are a lot of very, very interesting and good scenes, and it's a really good movie. You'll enjoy it.
We'll put 16 Candles. All right, we'll have that vote nodded. The theme being, it's my birthday later this week, so I thought what scenes feature prominent birthdays? And, you know, 16 Candles comes to mind. Joe Giglio. Keep up the great work with Ovius and Giglio. Should I set up that, are we going to hear calls Thursday night? Is there going to be an After Dark Thursday night that we're going to be keeping an eye on? Maybe? Possibly?
There will only be an emergency After Dark on Thursday night. So if NC State loses, since I like money and since YouTube will pay me, I will do it. But if State wins, as I expect, there will be no After Dark.
All right, Joe. It's good to see you. We'll talk soon.
All right, buddy. Anytime. Appreciate you.
Josh Graham loves to talk sports. He also loves to take herbal body baths to keep his skin supple and youthful looking. You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
You got the touch. You got the power.
Yeah! Will Dalton watched Boogie Nights for the first time last night. This movie and There Will Be Blood seem to be Paul Thomas Anderson's best movies. He has a new one coming out with Leonardo DiCaprio in a few weeks. Seems that that's going to be really good. Seems to be an action movie. Boogie Nights came out in 1997. The only time we've talked about this movie on the show is when I made the mistake of seeing it on Netflix, decided to download it while preparing for a plane ride. And while I'm on the plane, I quickly realize, for obvious reasons, maybe Boogie Nights, given the cast or given what the plot of this movie is, 70s adult film industry, maybe not the best choice with people sitting around you. So we'll see what Will Dalton thought, and hopefully by the end of this segment, we still have jobs. It's time for At the Movie with At the Movies with the WD.
Unless you're talking about Star Wars,
Obi-Wan has taught you well.
Movies aren't exactly Will's thing.
I don't get it.
You uncultured swine!
But that's about to change because Josh can't stand it anymore. This is At the Movies with Will Dalton.
What you liked, what you didn't like, best quote, Rotten Tomatoes score. I know Will Dalton liked this movie because he texted me earlier today, and I'm quoting, Boogie Nights is an early Best Picture nominee for the WDs, by the way. What did you like most about Boogie Nights? Please don't say one thing. Don't say the most meathead thing you could say about what you like the most about Boogie Nights.
I really like Heather Graham. Julianne Moore so hot.
That's not where I was going, although true statements, but that's not, you know, I'm bigger than that.
Okay, prove it.
First of all, this movie is an early nominee for next year's WDs.
I just said that you texted me that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sorry, I was thinking. I was getting my thoughts together. I really enjoyed the fact that this movie had a Star Wars Easter egg in it. It did. You were talking about the fact
John
that...
John C. Reilly, while making a margarita...
No.
Saying that he looks like Han Solo.
So shortly before that, the guy in the radio store, he's talking about the TK-421, right? Radio?
Yeah.
That is a nod to the Stormtrooper in Star Wars
that
went up into the Millennium Falcon, and then Han Solo, like, killed him, and then he... put on the Stormtrooper gear. That is TK-421, because the dude is like, TK-421, do you copy?
Okay. Paul Thomas Anderson.
A Star Wars Easter egg.
Was a kid in the 70s who was obsessed with the adult film industry and also Star Wars.
So it was just a beautiful marriage.
Yes. That's what you like the most about this movie.
I love that.
Okay. This is a 2-hour, 33-minute movie with a ton of themes. A lot of thoughts, a lot of performances.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're leading off with is a random Star Wars reference 10, 15 minutes into the movie?
Correct.
Okay. I have the cast written down. And what was cool rewatching this movie is the crossover. Burt Reynolds apparently hated this movie and apparently hated Paul Thomas Anderson. Turns out Burt can be a bit of a curmudgeon. But this is the last time Burt was in a really great movie. And the last time Burt Reynolds looked like Burt Reynolds, where Burt Reynolds was still a handsome guy. He's the director. He's Jack Horner in this movie. And seeing him in a movie with young Mark Wahlberg, who was at this time more known for being in Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch than being an actor, is great. And young Philip Seymour Hoffman just cracking everybody up as Scotty J. The unreal supporting cast, Julianne Moore,
yeah.
Heather Graham, Don Cheadle, John C. Reilly.
There were some real actresses in
this
movie.
People say I look like Han Solo. Oh.
By the way.
You want to go to Gold's Gym? I would have seen you there. I'm there every day.
Since you wanted to knock my Star Wars nugget, Connor O'Neill just texted me. He said, yes. May or may not have said bleep yes.
Good for you.
So... Connor appreciated it. And yes, there were very real actresses in this movie.
I never take my skates off. What didn't you like about Boogie Nights?
I do have a real take on this one.
Me too.
First of all, I took great offense when I took great offense when the mom came in, was like ripping down all his posters. Like, how dare you?
Yeah, she is kind of evil.
It's like, what are you doing? You're just ripping down these posters just because you don't like them and because I came home late?
The most telling shot of the entire movie when it comes to her, or I guess her involvement, Joanna Gleason's character as Mark Wahlberg's mom, is when he comes home late. There's one shot that is up for a few seconds where it pans to the dad sitting on the couch or sitting on the bed, sitting up, listening to them argue. And on his face is just despair. A man who's been beaten down by this devilish woman for decades.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't seem like he's living a very fun life.
But on a real note, this movie just got really dark.
Yeah, I have written down the second half of this movie.
Like, I really did. I was enjoying, and I still enjoyed the movie. But if I have to pick out something I wasn't loving, it's like the back half of this movie.
Well, that's kind of the point.
It got dark.
Kind of like Goodfellas. Where the first half is all this debauchery, all of this excess, and then the second half of Goodfellas, just like the second half of Goodfellas, or pardon me, Boogie Nights, are people paying the price for their sins, so to speak.
Which I figured.
Paying the price for the things that you've done. Everybody kind of got what they deserved. But you're right, in the second half of the movie, it's not as fun as the first half when you have the parking lot scene with Mark Wahlberg. You have the robbery as Jesse's girl is playing at Rahad's house. You have the limo scene with Roller Girl. You got the violent donut scene the donut shop scene.
Yep.
It's very bleak, but kind of...
And the music under it was really
the point.
Bleak, too.
It seems... Paul Thomas Anderson made a movie that's more fun than any movie you'll ever see for about an hour, and then a movie that's about as dark as any movie you'll see for another hour. And this movie's 2.5 hours.
Indeed.
It's quite a ride. WD, be careful. It's time for best quotes.
Well, you already got people telling me I look like Han Solo.
Yep.
Even though it's Han, but he said Han.
A lot of things we could say here. We could say here if we weren't on terrestrial radio. A lot of things.
Oh, yeah.
That you can say. But I don't think... Yeah, thank you, Eddie. Is one of the best quotes of the entire movie, but nothing's better than... Oh, you think so, Doctor? Oh, you think so?
Yeah, doctor. Shut up, Bill.
Uh-huh.
I think she's sick.
Oh, you think so, Doctor? Is pretty good. I have a lot of other things written down, but there's no way I could even remotely clean it up for this and do it justice in any way.
Next thing you know, it's going to be 1990 and then 2000. I just can't believe it.
It's a real movie. It's a real... Jack, it's a real motion picture. It's a real movie. I'm trying to remember what Amber said in that documentary that was so super funny. A lot of things where she was talking about the environment and things. It's great. Okay, Rotten Tomatoes score.
This one is tricky. I'm going to say this one probably got a 78. And I might be shooting it high there.
Those are really cool. Are they lizard? No, they're Italian. The answer is 89%, WD.
Wow, I undersold it.
89%.
Wow.
You don't ever disrespect me. You never disrespect me. That's been At the Movies with the WD.
I think we maneuvered that nicely.
We survived. It's no surprise to anyone who's been around Wake Forest football that Dave Clawson would be terrific at breaking down games on television. And he's been just that for the ACC Network through a few weeks. Dave Clawson now joining us here on WSJS. How much has this scratched that football itch with this being the first fall you haven't coached or been part of a team since likely you first learned the game?
Yeah, this is the first time, Josh, in 47 years that I haven't been on a football team as a player or coach. But I'm very grateful that the ACC Network, has given me an opportunity, and it gives me a chance to stay around the game. And I'm watching a ton of film and getting exposed to different offenses, different defenses. And it's been fun. It's been a way to stay involved with the game I love in a little bit of a different capacity.
With NC State visiting Wake Forest on Thursday night, here's what I picture behind the scenes. Jim Grobe likely handed you, when you took the job, the super secret handbook of how to terrorize the pack in Winston, and you've since passed that handbook along to Jake Dicker. Is that how this works?
Yeah, I don't think it's that easy. You know, that handbook that Jim handed me, it took us 4 years to get them. So, you know, NC State got after us pretty good in 14, 15, and 16. And then it finally, in 17, we had a team that could compete with them. And, you know, with the exception of 19, that we beat them pretty good. The games that we won against NC State, whether it be 17, 18, 21, 24, those are all fourth quarter, one score, and you could argue one play games. So we were fortunate, but they got us in 20 and 22 and got after us pretty good in 23. So I think part of the reason that we did well in that game is we always considered them our primary rival because we played them every year. You know, the series is close to 110 years consecutive games, but they were the one in-state team that we played every year that was in our division. And so that really became the game that I always felt we had to get if we were going to move up in the standings in the Atlantic when there were two divisions in the ACC. I'm not quite sure they considered us their rival. And I think that always helped us in that game, is that was always for us a red letter game.
In all seriousness, though, drilling deeper on that, like, you spent 11 years at Wake, That's by far your longest coaching stop. Dave Doran took over NC State the year before you got there. So when you look at that piece of this as well, your annual battles with the same coach, is there anything else in your coaching career when you factor in the in-state factor and the measurability of that program and your program in terms of resources, what's allotted? Did you ever have anything quite like that series with NC State in your career?
No, not really. But, you know, Dave had different coordinators. So, you know, you go from Matt Canada to Eli Drinkowitz and then Des Kitchens and then Robert and I and now Kurt Roper. And, you know, the other thing with Dave is we used to play them when he was at Northern Illinois and I was at Bowling Green. So I don't know, you know, in all the football games I've coached as a head coach, which is, you know, I think upwards of close to over 300 games, you know, probably I don't know if I've gone against the head coach as much, but I'll say this. I think Dave Doran is a really good football coach and I have a lot of respect for him. And he has made NC State a consistent program. And, you know, I know at times people say he hasn't gotten over the hump and there's a lot of teams in the country that would love to have that type of run of consistency and winning that he's done there. He is a really good football coach. And I think he's done a fantastic job this year so far.
It was pretty cool. Dave Clawson's with us here on WSJS. It was pretty cool to see a photo of all the living Wake Forest football head coaches together in the same stadium last week. When that group's together, what kind of discussions happen? Like, what subjects do you broach?
Well, I just think for all of them, you know, that I wanted every one of them to know individually that if whether they knew it or not, they had an impact on me. You know, John Makovic, you know, that's the first time I met him face to face. And my first job is my first game is the offensive coordinator at Villanova in 1996. We opened with Rutgers, who had just hired Rod Sharpless off the Virginia Tech staff. And Texas played Virginia Tech in the Sugar Bowl in 1995. Boy, I studied that film the whole year and stole so many offensive ideas from John Makovic. And then, you know, what Al Groh did with Parcells and Belichick on defense and how they taught ball security. We still, till my last day at Wake, those were the ball security drills we used. And I came and visited Wake Forest in the late 1990s when I was at Villanova. And I never saw a head coach have the impact on every single drill the way that Jim Caldwell did. Like, he was an impactful head coach. And then Jim Grobe, I don't know if I would have wanted the Wake Forest job if Jim Grobe didn't have it before me, because he proved you could win at Wake Forest and win at a high level. So in their own way, all of those guys had an impact on me. And, you know, I tried to share that with them individually. But the key part and what you said is I'm glad I'm part of the living group.
Right? Yeah.
So I think when everyone said, Jesus, the living head coaches, we all looked at each other and said, you know, as of today, yes, we're still on the right side of the ground.
When you were talking about whether they know it or not, they impacted me. You just reminded me of something you said in your stepping away press conference last December, where you said, whoever the next guy is, make sure to give him some time. Before you even knew it was Jake Dickert, you made a point to say that. In what ways since then have you tried to help or impact Wake Forest football, and what messages have you conveyed to Coach Dickert?
You know, I'm really not involved with Wake Forest football, you know, to any real degree anymore. I have let Coach Dickert know that I'm here to help him. I'm here to support him if he ever wants to call me, but I don't want to be a distraction or ever get in the way. So I've purposely stayed away from practices and games. Just because when I took over, you know, Jim Grobe did the same thing for me. And every place that I've been the head coach, you know, the previous head coach had let me do my job and run the program. So, you know, occasionally he'll text me or call me and ask me a question. But he's been a head coach before, and he has a program that he wants to run and do it his way and put his own stamp on that. And every head coach should have that right. but having invested 11 years of my life in Forest football, you know, I certainly want to be here to help if he ever feels he needs it or just wants a new perspective.
Let me throw a North Carolina question at you. Dave Clawson's with us here. Bill Belichick said last week, and I thought it was actually pretty enlightening, that it takes about a third of the season, roughly six games, before his teams would identify what it is for a year, like know what their identity is. And then he deduced that that timeline might be the same in college. He was talking about six games in the NFL. Maybe it's 3-4 weeks in college. What do you think about that timeline, and how much potential do you see can be unlocked from his group through 2 weeks?
Well, I always felt the same way. I always wanted our season to start with non-conference games. And I've said this before. Sometimes when you come out of spring ball and camp, you think you're a certain way, and then you find out through the first couple of games, your team maybe not be what you thought it was. In some places you might be better than you thought you were, and in some places you might not be as good. And so I think in college, especially because of the age of the players, you know, different players develop in different ways. And, you know, there's years that I thought, hey, we're going to be really good at throwing the ball this year. And, you know, through the first few games, we weren't good at throwing it at all. And we became a better running team. Or, you know, what's your relative strength? There's years that I thought, hey, this year we're going to be better on defense. And sometimes that proved correct. And other times it couldn't have been any further off. The success you have in camp a lot of times is based on where you're weak on your own football team. So sometimes we really threw the ball well in camp, and it was more because maybe we weren't that good at playing pass defense. And so once you start playing other people, you figure out what your relative strengths are. And then I think you can strategically adjust into October and November. And, you know, your goal is to always be playing your best football late. You know, now sometimes you get injured and that doesn't happen. But I would agree with Coach Belichick. I always felt that way, that I didn't really know our true identity until late September, early October.
Dave Clawson's with us here. It's a small sample, but North Carolina's offense looked incredible on the first drive against TCU, marched down the field for a touchdown, and then not so great the rest of the game against TCU. And then game two, kind of the same thing, three-play drive, 50-yard touchdown pass. Does it say anything about the preparation and coaching that you that right out of the gate you're able to script it that well?
Yeah, but I also think, you know, the advantage of being new is people aren't sure what you're going to do. The advantage of being there for a long time is you have the better ability to adjust. So for TCU, no idea what Carolina is going to do. Well, after a series, hey, guys, this is what we're doing. Okay, this is what we're going to start running now. And the volume of offense or defense you can run is greater the longer you are in a program. So, you know, if year one, your playbook is 10 pages, year two, maybe it's 15, and by year three, it's 20. The more access you have to the playbook, the better able you are to make adjustments. And TCU is a really, really good football team. Sonny Dykes is a heck of a football coach. You know, that quarterback is outstanding. He's been building a good program for a couple of years. And you know, I looked at Carolina's schedule. I thought TCU would be the second toughest game they'd play all year.
Dave Clawson's with us here. When Mack Brown came back from ESPN, I remember he said to me, I used to think that the media was out to get me until I joined the media, and this changed my way of how I approached the media once I got back into it. What are some of the things you've learned about our side now that you're part of it?
Well, I think more than anything, Josh, and to a degree I knew this, but the amount of work and preparation that goes into just what you're doing today.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of people think you just show up, put on a headphone, sit in front of the microphone and start talking sports. You know, the organization of every segment of your show, who you're going to talk to, preparing your questions, and for me, that's why I'm watching so much film, that whatever comes up, I want to be prepared as an analyst to answer it. And so as a coach, you dive into one team as deep as you possibly can. as a studio analyst, I have to have a working knowledge of 17 ACC teams and also have an idea of what's going on in the national scope. And it's fun, though. It's looking at football in a different way. And, you know, I think everyone, you know, there's the balance is that you want to portray people in as positive of light as you can. But at the same time, you have to be honest and authentic. And if something isn't good, you can't say it's good or you lose credibility with the audience. And, you know, like the other night, I mean, Virginia Tech lost the second half 34-0. There's no way of saying there's anything positive about that.
Yeah.
And as much as I like Brent Pry and I think Virginia Tech's a great program, that was a really bad half. Now, I've had those halves. You know, that happens sometimes. But there's no way sometimes of putting a positive spin on something that isn't positive.
Fourth and a foot, plus 34. Maybe go for it there is all I'll add to that. Dave Clausen's with us here. NC State Wake Forest also happens to fall on 9/11. Every year, I always respected during your weekly press conference this time of year, you'd remind us about your personal connection to that day. Since you don't have a podium this year to do it, I wanted to give you the opportunity to bring to life for us again why this week's so significant to you.
Well, there's two things. I mean, number one, you know, my sister worked in the second Trade Center building, and she worked in one of the high floors. And, you know, there was two companies that got hit really hard that day. One was Cantor Fitzgerald in the first building. The other was Aon Reinsurance in the second. And my sister worked for Aon. And when that second plane hit, I mean, I knew there was a good chance that she wasn't with us. And it was a miracle story. We couldn't get a hold of her for like 3 or 4 hours. But she saw the plane hit and got the last subway out of ground zero. And so, you know, every September 11th, I'm very thankful and certainly give prayers and thanks to God that my sister is still alive. And then I always think of Nick Brandimarty, who played fullback for us at Fordham and was a student coach for us his last year there. And just one of the best all-around people, well-rounded human beings, smart, good-looking, you know, good morals. You know, Nick had such a bright future ahead of him. And, you know, we lost him that day. And, you know, I mean, I think of Nick a lot, but especially on 9/11 and just how painful that was for his family and our football family at Fordham, you know, 24 years ago.
Thanks for sharing that. Just wanted to keep that going so that when people say hashtag never forget, we always get opportunities to bring those people back to life 24 years later, bringing their memory into focus. Dave Clausen?
Well, I really appreciate you, Josh, allowing me to do that. That means a lot. And, you know, there's not a day goes by that I'm not thankful I still have my sister, Kathy. And, you know, I just, Nick was, you know, cliches get used and everyone's special, but Nick was truly one of the best relationships I had formed my first couple of years at the head coach at Fordham. And, you know, I love that young man. And it was just heartbreaking to lose him. And, you know, I still get goosebumps thinking about him.
Keep being great at this business that you're now pursuing at the ACC Network. And we'll chat sometime soon. Thanks so much, Dave Clausen.
Okay, Josh, thanks for having me on.